Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to another episode of Say Why to Drugs with me, Dr. Susie Gage. I'm a psychologist at the University of Bristol, interested in understanding associations between substance use and mental health. And in this podcast, we look at a different recreational drug each week, discuss its harms, but also any potential benefits it might have, and bust some of the myths that might surround it. And in this episode, I'm talking with Scroobius Pip about amphetamine.
Say Why to Drugs with Dr. Susie Gage.
Okay, so let's talk about amphetamines.
Yes.
Amphetamines are a synthetic derivation of ephedrine, which is extracted from the ephedra plant, which has been commonly used in Chinese medicine.
Right.
It was first synthesized in around 1885, 1887, I think.
Wow.
And in the 1930s, it was first used sort of medically as an inhaler for asthmatics. It's a drug that was sort of first really came to attention during World War II because both the Allies and the Germans were using amphetamine pills, or in fact, the Allies were using amphetamine pills and the Germans were using methamphetamine pills.
Right.
Amphetamine in its sort of crystal powder form is a kind of white, off-white, pinkish powder.
Yep.
It can also be in pills. It can also get what's known colloquially as amphetamine base, but this isn't the same as like a free base.
Right.
It's like a putty kind of thing.
Okay.
And you can also get an amphetamine free base, is why it's quite confusing, which is like an oily liquid.
Right.
And then methamphetamine is another form, or like a slightly different derivation of amphetamine, which is sort of larger crystals.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Is that what they make in Breaking Bad?
That is what they make in Breaking Bad.
Just there you go. That's my point of reference on this
Excellent.
One.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay, so what do you think the appeal of amphetamines is? Oh, I should say amphetamine's also known as speed. It's that kind of that drug, yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's to use horrible slang terms I don't really have any right to use, but it's known as kind of a tweaker drug. It's known as a kind of, I don't know, I guess energetic, is it to bring you up and to get you kind of, a buzz, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes you confident, sort of alert and energised. It's kind of popular if you're going out dancing. It's kind of that kind of a drug to just give you, like you say, a kind of peppy
It's
kick.
Kind of, again, or realising what it is as such. When I was growing up in particular, speed did kind of seem to be the kind of almost, you don't want to go as far as pills or coke. It seemed like a lower down version of quite immediate but again, quite short term from what I remember. It just being, a bit of a buzz.
I think it's actually surprisingly long term.
Oh, really?
So it's another one where it really depends on how you're taking it as to the intoxication effects. So you can inject amphetamines, in which case obviously you'll get that immediate hit onset. You can snort them, which will mean you'll start to feel intoxicated after a few minutes. And if you can swallow it as well, either as a pill or in a kind of, wrapped in a cigarette paper bomb type thing. And that'll take about half an hour to have an effect. And you can be intoxicated for up to 4 to 8 hours.
Oh,
so
really?
It's pretty longer term, certainly, than something like cocaine.
Yeah,
it has a much longer effect. It's much more similar to like MDMA in terms of the how long you're going to feel kind of intoxicated. And it really sort of depends on, I think, you've much more long-lasting effect from methamphetamine than from amphetamine.
Right.
And sort of methamphetamine is to amphetamine what crack cocaine is to cocaine.
Right.
So similar kind of base of, not base, I keep using the word base, which is really unhelpful. A similar kind of chemical drug with a, just a slight tweak to make it slightly different, but the difference means it's much more stronger, and generally the way you consume it means it's much more likely to lead to dependence.
Yeah, again, a lot of people argue in these situations, oh, again, like cocaine and crack, it's the same thing. But again, it's the slight changes in its form, a large changes in the effect, in the addiction, in all sorts of other things. So I'd imagine it's a similar thing there. You could say, well, they're all amphetamine. It's like, well, yeah, there's variations.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll touch on that later on when we think about sort of medical uses for amphetamine as well.
Yeah.
So the short-term effects of amphetamine are things like you get confidence, you feel good, you get a feeling of well-being, alertness, motivation, your focus. If you snort or inject it, you get this kind of euphoric rush at the onset of taking it. So it's one of those drugs that the more immediate the method of consumption, the more strong you feel this kind of hit.
Completely.
And then the more you might feel like you want it again, the more kind of addictive properties it has. It can make you chatty, can make you feel social, you can experience increased sex drive, reduce your tiredness, increase your energy. So that's why it might be sometimes used as sort of performance enhancer, kind of cognitive enhancer.
I was going to say it's an interesting one that, again, it's weird, just you have to hear the right term or name to know what, as soon as you've said speed, I know that, again, in my teens, I tried that in at times, and it was very much a night out drug.
Yeah.
But since I don't do anything anymore, it is something I've heard of as a study drug and a general, that kind of increase in awareness or sharpness or awakeness, I guess, and being used in that way as well.
I might do an episode specifically about these kind of cognitive enhancers, so things like Ritalin, Adderall, modafinil, that were originally developed for as ADHD drugs, treatments for things like for ADHD, but they are amphetamine based drugs.
Sure.
Some of these things will apply, but this sort of, again, it's like the set and the setting. If you take something like if you snort some powdered amphetamine in a club and you go feel like dancing, you probably wouldn't think, oh, I'd be really good at writing an essay
now. Go and study now.
Yeah, but in a different environment.
Turn this music off, I've had no idea.
The sort of flip side to these kind of short-term effects is that it can also, when you're intoxicated, increase your anxiety, irritability, make you feel restless, potentially even paranoia, and potentially even transient psychosis. So amphetamine-induced psychosis is a well-documented, with a caveat, well-documented in case studies, less well-understood in a sort of population level.
Yeah.
And you can experience this while you're intoxicated, but the after-effects could last for sort of a few days afterwards.
Right. Wow.
And it's like all stimulants, it increases your heart rate and your blood pressure, increases your body temperature, you get a dry mouth, it lowers your appetite. For a while, amphetamine was used as a diet pill, and you get dilated pupils as well. And there's some suggestion that intoxication is associated with violence.
Right.
But again, this isn't particularly well understood because, like we've said, with a lot of these illegal drugs, it's quite hard to do the research, partly because they're illegal. People don't necessarily want to admit to it. They're not used as widely as drugs like alcohol, where it's easier, but still not that easy to try and do these kind of studies.
Yeah.
Amphetamine withdrawal, again, it's kind of like the opposite of amphetamine intoxication. So you can feel tired, hungry, irritable, depressed, insomnia, mood swings and cravings for the drug. Yeah.
It's interesting. It was used as a diet pill at a time, because, again, it's another one I remember of people going, yeah, I'll take some speed and miss lunch kind of thing. And that kind of thing is an option in that way, which is, again, horrendous thought that something that's potentially as dangerous or potentially numerous other effects because of social pressures. It's like, yeah, but it'll stop me being hungry.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, let's ignore everything else there then.
Yeah, I think that's true for quite a lot of stimulants, that they tend to reduce your appetite.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, this amphetamine in particular was marketed as a diet pill before the sort of dependence inducing nature of it became better understood, and then it was kind of taken off the market when it was realised that actually it had this potential for abuse. The longer term impacts of amphetamine, like all stimulants really, it increases your risk of heart attack and stroke, in particular in those already at risk, sort of with family history of heart problems and that kind of thing, high blood pressure. It can also worsen the symptoms of glaucoma, so that's people who've already got glaucoma. And I think this is due to the blood pressure effects, because it changes the pressure inside the eye.
Yeah.
And we sort of mentioned psychosis already. If taken in very large amounts, you can get amphetamine-induced psychosis. How much you have to take and how high your risk is if you do take these large amounts is poorly understood. You can experience things like paranoia and delusions and hallucinations. But I think it's important to state that it's really unclear how how much you need to take, whether just a sort of heavy weekend user would be at risk, or whether you really have to properly be taking it all day, every day. And again, who is at risk? Is it everyone, or is it specifically people who have a history of mental health problems? Yeah. I would say it's yet another drug that if you do have a history of mental health problems, it's probably one to steer clear
of.
There are case reports of people never fully recovering from amphetamine-induced psychosis. But again, it's very hard to glean causality from case reports, because it's difficult to know whether it's something else that was already going on in this person's life, whether this would have happened anyway from just one person. You can't really draw X causes Y kind of conclusions.
And again, it's interesting because throughout the course of these podcasts, looking at recreational drugs for what they are rather than just grouping them as recreational drugs, it's interesting to see that there are certain recreational drugs that you can say this in all likelihood could help this mental issue or glaucoma or whatever else, whereas these really would definitely work against it. And it's a fascinating thing there, because that seems odd to me. It shouldn't. Obviously, in medication, there's two different things that you could get prescribed, and one would make a certain situation worse and one would make it better. It's the same with the illegal drugs that you generally just think all of them are bad, or equally, because of the talk how weed helps this and helps that and helps this, you know, you'd think all of them are helpful in some way, and it's not the case.
Yeah. And amphetamine's got a kind of come down, which lasts kind of a couple of days after you've taken it. And this is, again, like basically the withdrawal. It's kind of, depression and insomnia and mood swings and things like that. And again, if you choose to inject your drug, you're at really high risks. And I recommend listening to the episode about heroin where we sort of talk in more detail about the kind of risks from injecting things like infections, and then if you're sharing needles, things like HIV and hepatitis as well. There's some suggestion that heavy amphetamine use for a long period of time can lead to irregular heartbeat and kind of heart problems.
Right.
So we've already mentioned that, like all stimulants, it could put you at higher risk of things like heart attacks and strokes, but it might actually do sort of maybe less severe but more permanent damage. And again, it's not well documented, so it's kind of something that we can't be sure about. But this is the way the evidence is pointing at the moment. So again, it's the one that if you do have sort of history of heart problems, it's really not recommended.
Yeah.
In terms of sort of long-term effects on mental health, there's some association between long-term amphetamine use and changes in brain structure and anhedonia. And anhedonia is sort of a lack of being able to feel joy.
Right, wow.
So it's similar-ish to depression, but not really the same things. But the problem is that the studies that look at this is you can't really do a before and an after.
Yeah.
So what you'd ideally want to do is take a brain scan and then before someone's ever used amphetamine after they've been using it for years. But it's very unlikely that that situation will arise because you'd have to have just happened to have done a brain scan
of this person. Yeah.
You can't go and tell someone to get an amphetamine dependency, obviously. So it's really difficult to know whether these changes lead people to want to use amphetamine or are a result of heavy amphetamine use.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to tease that out. And again, with the anhedonia, are these people taking amphetamine because they want, because they can't feel joy in the world, or is it a consequence of heavy amphetamine use?
Exactly, and that's key to highlight, because someone could argue, well, if it's repeatedly something that's coming up in amphetamine users, then it's clearly the amphetamine that's causing it. It's like, well, no, as you said, it could be the reason they've gone to amphetamine because of having this lack of feeling in this way or that way. It could be what's drawn them in that direction rather than it causing it. So, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, this is, I think we've probably talked about this in quite a few episodes, but this is, like, a big problem with observational epidemiologies, where you just have to watch what people choose to do and then try and infer what's causing what after the fact, because you can't ever be sure that there's not something else different between the two groups that's kind of driving it. And where you do see a really strong difference, you can't tell whether it's a cause or an effect.
Yeah.
So it's trying to untangle that. It's really, really hard. And amphetamine dependence is associated with poor sleeping, which I guess isn't really surprising because it's a stimulant.
Yep,
so it's going to make you
find
it harder to sleep. Poor nutrition, which again isn't really surprising since it suppresses appetite. Anorexia, again.
Yeah.
And having a prematurely aged appearance.
Right.
So, but again, this is probably due to not eating properly and not sleeping properly.
I was going to say, the three are listed prior to that make perfect sense in the fourth there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so should we get on to some of the myths surrounding amphetamines? Yesterday on Twitter, someone said amphetamine changes your voice.
Right.
They said that they had heard a myth that regular amphetamine use makes you sound like you're on helium. So I'd never heard this myth before, so I did some internet digging and found other people saying that when they take Adderall or modafinil, so these cognitive enhancers that are amphetamine-based, that they feel like they have a fuller voice or a deeper voice.
Right.
To me, I think what's more likely, and again, I don't know this, but this is my sort of hypothesis, is that when you're intoxicated and you're having slight changes of perception, that this you might hear your voice in a different way to how you normally hear it because your sort of your brain is slightly working in a different way to how it normally works.
Yeah.
If anyone listening knows any scientific reason why amphetamine might change your voice, then please get in touch, because I'm genuinely very interested to know whether this is
the case. Yeah, it's a fascinating one. I can understand the theory of it, again, as it's a stimulant. It might make you more expressive or more, do you know what I mean? More punching
louder,
things.
Yeah,
but that just comes down to louder rather than high pitch or a deeper tone. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, myth number two. I feel like I've slightly not answered that one, but as with these podcasts, I'm always keen to learn more. So watch this space.
And again, it's a case of, as we've said numerous times on this, it's a case of, if we've got a legitimate proven answer, then there will be a legitimate proven answer. Other than that, then we'll make it clear that it could be this, but we don't know. This isn't backed up as such.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, myth number two, speed can sober you up. And related to this, you can pass a breathalyzer test if you're stopped by the police, if you've been drinking alcohol and then have taken
some speed. Right.
It's much easier to overdose on alcohol when you're high on amphetamines, as it can mask intoxication. This is kind of similar to what we discussed in the coffee episode, in that you can feel like you're fine when actually you're much more intoxicated than you realised on the alcohol, because the speed is sort of masking your perception of how drunk you are.
Yeah.
It won't make you be able to pass a breathalyzer test, and it most definitely won't make you a safer driver. So regardless of whether you can pass a breath test or not, if you've taken alcohol and speed, you absolutely shouldn't be getting behind the wheel of a car.
I mean, it's always fascinating how so many myths come about to fit someone's ideal situation. That they want to get their car home. Here's the solution. If you take this, I'm safe now. No, the fact is, if you've been drinking, you're not going to pass a breathalyzer, no matter what you take after drinking too much. You're not going to pass a breathalyzer test, and you're not going to be safe to drive, right? If there was something you could take that could just turn off the effects of alcohol, then it'd be the biggest thing in the world, because everyone would have that for hangovers and everything else. But yeah,
well, yeah, watch this space for David Nutt's synthetic alcohol then, because that's exactly what he's proposing, is that you can take something that will mimic the effects of alcohol, and then when you've had enough, you take the antidote. And,
oh wow!
Yeah, and I'm not sure how far he's got with that, but it's definitely something to
that's
keep an eye out if that is
to
possible.
Turn it on and
yeah,
turn it off. Yeah.
Okay, another myth: speed can clear your lungs if you're a smoker. There's no evidence that that's the case. I've no idea how that would work. Again, if anyone has any sort of more detail behind these myths, that's the problem with these myths, is that I don't get a little handbook of going, and this is why they think it works and that kind of thing. It's just generally one tweet from someone going, I heard this.
My mate Mark says, all right, is that Dr. Mark or just Mark?
Okay, next myth. Speed uses up a chunk of the finite number of beats that your heart can do.
Okay, right, that's a fascinating one.
That was a great sigh, yeah. your heart doesn't have a finite number of beats in that kind of a way. It does put a strain on
because
your heart,
we'd all
as we've
kind
discussed.
Of be able to estimate exact time of expiration, right?
Yeah.
If we could say, well, so far I've had this many beats.
Yeah, so
almost at my limit.
I want to go for a run, but that'll use up more beats, so yeah, maybe I should just
again,
sit on the sofa.
It does lean towards a life of playing computer games and sitting on the sofa.
So, yeah, no. It does put a strain on your heart, or stimulants put a strain on your heart.
I was going to say,
so,
again, as much as we're laughing here, not that it's a number of beats. Obviously, as we've said before, the more you ramp your heart up, the more potential risk, particularly if there's any history or anything like
exactly.
that. But yeah, the part that's amusing is the idea that there's a specific number of heartbeats that we're all allocated.
Yeah. So yeah, once again, it's a myth that's sort of somewhat based in truth, but just expressed in a very, very odd way.
Yeah.
The last one I got was that amphetamines rot your teeth.
Right.
And so there are lots of academic papers on meth mouth. People who have a heavy methamphetamine use have bad teeth. So it could be due to if you smoke meth, then you're sort of putting lots more pressure on your mouth, so more at risk of oral cancers and that kind of thing, and more at risk of problems to your teeth. Because you've got a drier mouth and a lower appetite, this can also lead to sort of tooth problems. If you're not eating as much, quite often what you'll end up eating is sweeter things, which can mean that you can do more damage to your teeth.
And again, I mean, the tooth things you've touched upon of potentially less sleep and low appetite, that all goes towards all health issues.
Exactly.
If you're not sleeping and not eating right, then everything health-wise, skin, teeth, everything is likely to go downhill.
And the same with all drugs that you get a really heavy dependence to. If you're heavily dependent on a drug, you take less care of yourself anyway. Yeah. And let alone if that also impacts on your sleeping and your nutrition.
Yeah.
So all of these things combined, I think maybe the teeth is somewhere where it's visible. But as we've said, it's associated with having a prematurely aged appearance as well. So, yeah.
Makes sense.
Okay, so are there any benefits of amphetamines?
Right.
And we sort of touched on this already. So certainly it was thought that you could use them as a diet pill, but their ability to be abused led to that being kind of abandoned.
Yeah, and again, a kind of increased education on how dieting and how the body works, that it's not a case of
just starving
eat less
yourself,
and it's better. Again, often most experts will say the best ways to lose weight all involve eating potentially more than you were eating, but it's eating of the right stuff and the right things to make your body work and so on and so forth. So again, there's that illusion there at a time where this will stop you eating.
Yeah.
And the fact is, often if you're starving your body, it will slow your metabolism down and won't want to burn off fat because it's panicking. It's going, oh, we're starving. I need to hold on to as much fat as possible. So yeah, it's a backwards logic.
Yeah, nutrition is still so poorly understood that the idea that you just sort of, it's a really simple one-to-one relationship of put less in, get less out, actually much more complicated.
I remember hearing an interview with a sumo wrestler, and one of the big things in sumo is to skip breakfast and starve in the morning and then overeat in the evening, and that's how they bulk up. So again, it's proven it's because of that not eating in the morning is slowing down the metabolism and making your body stop burning things off. So then you take in a lot and it stays there. So again, that it completely dispels any idea that taking something to make you skip a meal or something like that isn't going to help.
But we do use amphetamines in medication today, and I think I sort of mentioned this earlier, that related drugs are used to treat ADHD and that potentially are now abused as, or used or abused, depending on how you look at it, as cognitive enhancers, so things like modafinil and Ritalin. Amphetamines are used to treat narcolepsy, which is, I've got written down on my notes, inappropriate / unexpected sleeping, which is a little bit of a sort of shorthand way of describing it. But it's people who just suddenly fall asleep and they can't really control when it happens.
Yeah. It's often in a situation of stress and stuff like that can cause it. And interesting.
And there's some suggestion that it might be useful for treatment-resistant depression.
Yeah.
And we've mentioned earlier that it's probably not a good idea to take amphetamine if you have sort of a risk or history of mental health problems.
Right.
But so this is very much as a last resort because it's obviously has the potential for addiction and the risk of harm is much greater than for more traditional kind of antidepressants. But it's another thing that's kind of being researched at the moment that potentially it could be used to treat really severe treatment-resistant depression.
Yeah.
But, watch this space. It's kind of like with there's a few drugs that we've talked about where we've mentioned that they're currently being investigated as a potential treatment for depression. And I think this also says a lot about how hard it is to treat depression rather than that illegal drugs are brilliant for depression. It's that we're really looking everywhere we possibly can for treatments for depression because current ones work for some people but by no means work for everyone.
Yeah, it's fascinating that there are a lot of them. I think there's scope to at some point do just a whole episode of just updates.
Here's stuff,
not just saying here's the cannabis update, just going here's an update episode. Stuff we've learned since that.
Drugs
new papers that have come out. Here's what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. And then I guess we should probably end this episode with the usual discussion of how it's a white powder or a white pill usually. So again, it could be cut with anything. It can really vary in strength, which means that if you're used to it, then what you might take what you think and it might be completely different to what you're expecting. This can make it pretty dangerous in terms of overdose.
Yeah.
It's also very dangerous to take amphetamine if you're on certain antidepressants, so these ones called MAOI inhibitors.
Right.
Amphetamine can interact with them and be extremely dangerous, potentially even fatal. So if you're on those antidepressants, you absolutely shouldn't use amphetamines. But I think, as far as I'm aware, most people are no longer prescribed those because they interact with a load of other things as well.
Right.
So they're just not a particularly good antidepressant in that in that term. Cool.
Excellent.
And there we go. Thanks again for downloading and listening to the podcast. I'm really, really glad that people seem to be enjoying this series so much. To that end, if you'd like to leave us a lovely review or subscribe, that would be brilliant. As always, if you're trying to quit and you want some help, I've included some useful links on Acast. So if you listen to the podcast through that app, you can get lots more information and links to further reading and that kind of thing. At the moment, I'm not 100% sure what episode will come next. I think probably e-cigarettes, but I might have to do a bit of reshuffling and have the episode about poppers next. But these are certainly the next two episodes anyway. I'm just not quite sure which way round they'll be. Either way, I hope you'll join us next time. Bye! You've been listening to Say Why to Drugs with me, Dr. Susie Gage. The music and editing were by Jim Murray. The artwork is by @MyNameIsAd. Say Why to Drugs would not have been possible without the generous support of I'm a Scientist, Get Me Out of Here, the Medical Research Council, and Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.